The information in this podcast is alleged and based on our understanding and research at the time of recording. We make every effort to ensure the accuracy of the information presented, but we cannot guarantee that all data is entirely accurate or complete. The opinions expressed herein are solely those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the views of any organizations mentioned. Listeners are encouraged to conduct further research and consult professionals before making decisions based on any information provided in this podcast. For further information and full case files, including crime scene photos and case reports, please go to the link in our show notes. Viewer discretion is advised. Previously on The Stack Deck.
We believe any time there is serious misconduct by any law enforcement official, Hennepin County stacks the deck with their in-house experts, making it virtually impossible to hold them accountable. As I stated earlier, to lose a son in such a horrific way and then to have the county attorney's office working against you, the level of corruption in this case will blow your mind, so please keep listening. When my wife and I arrived at the hospital the night of the fire, I asked Miss X what happened. She said, among other things, David woke her up, told her it was time to go, and pushed her out of the apartment. I asked her, "Did you try to get back in?" To which she responded, "Yes, but he locked the door."
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, the police did say the door was locked when they got there, didn't they?
No, they did not. Maintenance workers, they opened the door, it was open, and that's in their testimony.
Do you have a key to open the apartment, or was the apartment door open?
No, the apartment door was open. But I think we pretty much had the fire out before the fire department got there.
Did you make a statement to the police of the whole incident, or did you just basically clear out of there?
I cleared out of there. They never asked me for any type of statement, really, whatsoever.
Welcome back to the Stack Deck podcast series, episode 3, What We Believe Happened. To fully comprehend how it even be possible for David to be a victim of foul play and have oil poured over him, you need to fully understand how vulnerable and defenseless David was when in psychosis. On January 12th of 2018, just 3 weeks before his death, my wife and I noticed David acting strangely and speaking in very euphoric, sensational terms, so we went to visit him at his apartment. By all indications, David was experiencing delusions and possible hallucinations. On this evening, David eventually ended up on his hands and knees on his living room floor. And while he was in this state, Miss X proceeded to kneel in front of him and began to aggressively slap David across the face, shouting his name. At this point, my wife screamed, "What are you doing?" To which she replied, "Well, it has worked before." Miss X acknowledges this incident in an audio recording that was made of his testimony. To the lead investigator, she states that, quote, "And when this would happen in the past, I normally would try to get his attention. I would smack him in the face, grab his face, look at me. His parents really didn't like that I did that, but, you know, that's another story," end quote.
Friday, David and I were supposed to watch my best friend's son for the weekend. And so I was meeting her out in Buffalo. And so I had called him on my way home just to check in again. You know, he was texting me like it was normal. He wasn't irrational. It wasn't like anything out of the blue.
Okay.
So I called him on the way home. Normal, nothing strange. So I'm driving to Buffalo and he called and he said, "Oh, my parents wanted to come over." And I said, "Okay, well, can you just ask them to wait until I'm there?" And then he said, "I should be home 6:37, somewhere around there." He said, "Okay." Then he calls me back. "Well, why isn't that? They're just my parents didn't come over." I said, "Well, I think there's a lot going on with you and I would like to be there so that I can understand, you know, what they're seeing, what they're hearing, what they're saying. And what I can help support you because you're my husband and that sort of thing." He said, okay, I'll tell him. So I went and picked up my friend's son in Buffalo on my way home. I have no idea, like I hadn't talked to him since I left Buffalo.
Okay.
So I get home, bring him upstairs, and as I get to the door, I can hear some voices. Open the door. Scott and Nancy are sitting at our dining table. David is sitting there in, I believe, dress underwear, reading the book of Revelation. So at this moment, I'm thinking, shit.
Yeah.
Many other things run through my head, but I'm thinking, okay, like, what's going on? You know, I walk in, and I was like, oh, I didn't think you guys, you know, were getting here until later. Like, I was pretty upset at this point, just because, like, I have my French kid. That's just my priority right now, to protect this baby.
Yeah.
But it's also my priority to support my husband. And I was upset that they were already there, because I had no idea what happened from the time I hung up the phone to the time I walked in.
Yep.
And so I called a lot of people. I called his mom, the baby's mom, to say, I don't know what's going on. She said, do you need me to come? I said, I don't know. And I had called, I think, my dad, just to be like, I don't know what's happening. It's literally insane. It's insanity. Scott and Nancy had brought him some dinner. He wasn't eating, wasn't responding to me whatsoever. We were there for maybe 2 hours at our apartment. So through this process, his parents had bought like an at-home drug test for him to take, because they thought he had taken something to cause this. And I mentioned previously that years ago, sometimes David would get very intoxicated and he would sort of act similar without the religious piece.
Right.
He would be very, like, angry at me.
Did he drink a lot prior to this, or was it?
I would love to say that I know how much he drank, but I realize now that I probably do not. He moved home in July from North Dakota, and he hasn't drank a ton leading up to this.
Okay.
But I believe out in North Dakota, he was drinking pretty heavily. And I lived out there for two different times. I lived out there once for 3 months and then once for 8 months.
Okay.
With his sister, working out there. And this happened like the first time I lived out there, which was maybe the first year into our relationship, where he accused me, and it wasn't every time he would get super intoxicated, it was like randomly, once every now and then, he was very, very drunk. It was almost like he was like happy, go lucky dude, and then he like would take one more drink, and all of a sudden it would just be like, I'm angry with you, you're a terrible person, I can't believe you would lie to me. I never lied to him about anything. But he would get this, like, sort of look in his eye where he, like, wasn't really there, and that's kind of how he was acting. And so at that point, I thought he had just gotten drunk from the time he got home until then.
Sure.
And when this happens in the past, I normally would try to get his attention. I'd smack him in the face, grab his face, look at me, what did you drink? What did you take? You know, what's going on? His parents really didn't like that I did that. But, you know, that's another story.
Keep in mind, here is a 6'2", 190-pound man, a former oil rig worker, on his hands and knees being aggressively slapped several times across the face by his 5-foot-tall petite wife, whom he does not and cannot protect himself against. David, in this psychosis state, was defenseless, completely vulnerable to anyone, even his small wife. David was eventually admitted into Fairview Medical Health Hospital and spent the next 12 days being evaluated. He was diagnosed with possible drug-induced psychosis, NEC, and nonspecific schizophrenia. When David died, he had no drugs or alcohol in his system. I believe there are far fewer coincidences in life than you think. For Miss X to volunteer this information in a recorded conversation was not a coincidence. Had this statement not been made and recorded, it would have simply been our word against hers. Now the entire world can learn how vulnerable David was and how inhumane Miss X treated him when he was completely defenseless. So maybe David didn't kill himself after all, but instead was a perfect candidate to be murdered in the most sadistic way. I'm sure there are very few murder cases where there are 5 audio recordings made of the witness. The audio recording should shed light on what really happened the night David died. Normally, when there is only one witness to events that lead to a death, that person's testimony is critical to the case and is carefully analyzed. As you will see, Miss X's description of the events of that evening don't make a lot of sense, but the lead investigator bought every word, and in his interview, he never asked one critical question. We will review what Miss X says in these recordings, but first, here are a few examples of her comments that stand out that are especially concerning. Notice how she seems to cover herself to preemptively address likely questions that would eventually come up. David called her a master manipulator. So we'll call this cover number 1. In the recording made by my daughter the day before the funeral, it appears that one of the first things Miss X wants us to know about the evening is that they did not discuss the topic of divorce. She says that when David got home, quote, "I asked him how you guys were, what you guys visited about. He said, same old, same," end quote. When asked by the state fire marshal whether or not they discussed taking a break, she says she doesn't remember. Notice how many times she says, "Ah,"
Did David ever talk about his visit with his parents and that he needed a break from your relationship and wanted to move home?
He did talk about his visit with his parents. He did not mention directly that he wanted a break from our relationship. He talked very briefly about moving home with his parents, but it, again, was very brief, kind of just like, I did mention that to my parents. But
when was that conversation?
I'm not sure. I don't remember.
Was it the day of the incident or maybe that week?
It was definitely that week. I don't remember if we talked about that day exactly.
Do you know that he had been talking to his dad about possibly divorce and then moving back in with them?
No.
So he never mentioned that to you?
Mm-mm.
When asked when this conversation took place, she responds, quote, "I'm not sure. I don't remember. It was definitely that week. I don't remember if we talked about that day exactly." Cover number two. She also describes a peaceful evening. "We just sat around, watched TV. We're watching Planet Earth on Netflix and laughing at the silly animals," end quote.
"We were watching Planet Earth on Netflix and laughing at the silly animals."
The idea of a peaceful evening, however, contradicts what she told the lead investigator, Bird, when she says, quote, "I had a terrible day at work on Thursday, like everything that went wrong that could go wrong," end quote.
His dad had texted him Wednesday night. His dad was he was pretty rude to me. He yelled in my face a few times about him being in the hospital when he was in the hospital the first time, and decided that it was time for him to apologize after David had talked to him and David's sister had sort of told him he was out of line. And this was like 2 weeks prior that this incident between his dad and I had happened.
Okay.
And so David was like, "Yeah, my dad wants to apologize. And I had a terrible day at work on Thursday. Like, everything that went wrong, that could go wrong, went wrong. And I was just like, I don't want to deal with this. I just want to go home and snuggle with my dog and my husband and whatever." And so I get home and David's like, "Yeah, my dad got sick," which is not probably true. But he just didn't want to come and apologize, so I said, "Okay, whatever."
Yeah.
And David's like, "Yeah, not surprised." So I said, "Yep, okay."
She also says, "While he was eating, I remember, like, I got annoyed because he was chewing his food really loud, and that drives me crazy. So for a little bit, I went into the bedroom and was working on my homework," end quote.
"Wanted to take a bath, which wasn't super out of the ordinary, a little bit odd. So he took a bath, and then he went down. Our apartment had a sauna. I believe he went and turned that on and went in there for a little bit, which was very normal for him, and then jumped in that, came back. He said he wasn't feeling great, but I reminded him he hadn't had dinner, so he ate, and that was pretty late, 9:30, I don't know exactly. We sat on the couch with our dog after that and watched Planet Earth, which was super normal, and then while he was eating, I remember, like, I got annoyed because he was chewing his food really loud, and that drives me crazy.
"I had planned to apologize to Miss X for telling her at the hospital that I was going to get legal guardianship of David after witnessing her smack him across the face. I was going to apologize not because I believed I needed to, but because I didn't want David to have any extra pressure or conflict in his life. However, after what David shared about the relationship being toxic and that he wanted to get a divorce, I saw no need to apologize. I can only imagine if chewing his food loud upset Miss X, how pissed off she would have been when she learned I wasn't going to apologize, that David wanted a divorce, and that my wife and I were going to support him moving back home. This doesn't seem like a stage that is set for a peaceful evening, but rather one that is set for a hot-tempered Miss X to go ballistic." Cover number three. When asked by the lead investigator about the time frame when everything went, quote, haywire, Miss X responded, quote, "So it had to be between 10:45 and 10:50 that I heard David say, 'Emily, it's time to get up,'" end quote. She repeats this time frame more than once in the various recordings.
"It was probably or so. I really don't know exactly what time it was. Everything happened in probably 2 minutes.
You said things kind of went haywire at like 10:45?
It was between 10:45 and maybe 10:50.
Okay.
He woke me up at like 10:45 or 10:50, I'm not exactly sure.
The neighbor living directly below their apartment also reported hearing a loud thud 10 to 15 more minutes before 11.
Loud arguing. They were arguing. Okay. And
you heard you voices yelling?
Yeah, I could tell what they were saying, but they were arguing.
Okay.
And loudly going back and forth, because I sit on my couch, so yes. Back and forth. And she was going nuts because she don't like the loud noise. And I used to call people up, the Giants are walking now, because calm her down, I have to say something. So there was a lot of walking back and forth, and not lightly, just boom, boom. I heard a big boom, like somebody dropped something or somebody fell. We just sat here, and then a while later, the fire alarm went off.
The first 911 call came in at 1:02:11. Based upon her own testimony, this would allow Miss X 10 to 15 minutes to get control of her phone from a mentally ill man who is purportedly pouring unrefined Bakken oil over the top of his head and would undoubtedly have this oil in his eyes and on his hands. Cover number 4. When Miss X states she ran into the gentleman in the hallway screaming, she says she immediately dialed 911. This is not true. After Miss X pounded on the neighbor's doors, that neighbor immediately called 911. When this neighbor was interviewed by the state fire marshal 6 months after David's passing, he stated that it didn't look like she had thought about calling 911 until I asked her if she had had, end quote. The facts are Miss X didn't call 911 almost exactly 1 minute later when she is heading down the 3 flights of stairs and out the back door. Cover number 5, the wedding band. While sitting in the back of the squad car giving her statement, knowing full well David had third-degree burns on the majority of his body, Miss X brings up David's wedding band. Apparently, Miss X believes it is necessary to explain why David wasn't wearing his wedding ring on the night he died. Quote, David did go out to his truck one more time. I think he had left his wedding band. He doesn't wear it when he works, and so I think he had left his wedding band in the vehicle, end quote.
He did come out to his truck a few times because he had left a soda or something that he wanted in his truck, but he was only out for, you know, just enough time to grab it and come back, and he did go out one more time. I think he had left his wedding band. He doesn't wear it when he works, and so I think he had left his wedding band in the vehicle.
If this is true, then David, on the evening of leaving his wife, decides to get his wedding band he forgot in the truck, only to bring it back to the apartment and set it up on the nightstand next to the bed, which is where it is photographed the night of the fire. Cover number 6. To the lead investigator, Miss X states, "So I went into the bathroom to rinse the oil off because I thought if he lights this, I'm going up in flames too. So I was like, I need to get this off my body, and I didn't really realize that it was like my entire front was covered. I could feel like it on my arm, so I ran into the bathroom, turned the water on, and went like this back and forth. And that's when I saw, like, the little clicker lighter," end quote.
And, like, he's never aggressive, so this was so out of character for him. He wasn't holding me hard, like, but he was just trying to get my phone. So I went into the bathroom to rinse the oil off, because I thought if he lights this, I'm going up in flames, too. So I was like, I need to get this off of my body. As you know, I didn't really realize that it was my entire front was covered. I just could feel it on my arm.
Sure.
So I ran into the bathroom, turned the water on, went like this, went back out, and that's when I saw like the little clicker lighter with the like you light a candle.
Oh, sure.
I saw that, and I was just like, what? And he, while I was doing that in the bathroom, he had picked up the jug thing again and poured more oil.
Where was the lighter at?
It was sitting behind him on the counter.
Yeah.
And so I reached for the lighter, you know, to try and take it with me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have many lighters in the house, but it was just right there.
Right.
So I tried to take it with me.
If we are understanding Miss X correctly, while her husband has poured unrefined Bakken oil over the top of his head on two occasions and is now standing in front of the stove, which has all of its burners lit up, along with a lighter placed on the counter directly behind him, Miss X decides to protect herself and go to the bathroom to wash herself off, knowing full well, despite the fact that there has yet been any fire, she is still concerned that she too could go up in flames. It sounds like she also sprayed water over her front to protect herself when she says, quote, "I turned the water on and went like this," end quote. We'll never know what the "turn the water on and went like this" gesture was because there was no video made of this critical interview. Having a video of this meeting would have made Miss X and Mr. Bird, too, for that matter, even look more ridiculous. It is worth mentioning that there was no audio or video made of my interview with the lead investigator, in which he tells me that the reason they didn't rescue David was because they believed he was lying in wait. How convenient. We'll get to that issue when we address the Plymouth Police Department. Cover number 7. In the audio recordings, Miss X talks about reaching for the sink sprayer to try to wash the oil off of David. Here's what she said to the state fire marshal.
When I saw him pouring the oil, I reached behind him where the sink was, and there's like a sprayer. That was just like my first instinct to like get the oil off of him. So I reached for that. So I got pretty covered in oil myself.
Did you ever get to the sprayer?
I think I maybe grabbed it, but I didn't, like, I couldn't turn the sink on and use it.
Okay, did you ever pull it out of its holder?
I think so.
Okay.
And I also tried to grab the lighter because it was, like, close by, or grab the lighter, like, as I was getting pushed away from the sink.
Miss X also believes it is necessary to tell the lead investigator David was facing the stove, not towards the sink. She says, quote, "And then that's when I saw, I'm shaking. That's when I saw the light that indicates the burners are on the stove was on, and he was standing facing the stove." What is most interesting about these comments is it puts Miss X right where we believe David was positioned, leaning over the sink when the fire was ignited. Our independent fire expert concluded that the fire was started in front of the dishwasher, which would have been just to the right of the sink. We know that David was more severely burned on his right side. David had a very distinct protected area on both of his wrists. There even appears to be an imprint on David's wrist which matched the edge of the sink. We also learn from the photographs that oil was spilled directly below the sink, indicating that this is where oil was poured. If David was positioned over the sink with his wrist pressed against the edge of the sink at the time of ignition, it would then be almost impossible for him to have lit himself on fire, let alone having poured oil over the top of his head 2 times, but miraculously, he got no oil or burns on the interior of his wrist. There is no logical way this could happen. When you factor in that the investigators could not find the purported lighter that David had, Miss X's story of what happened that night became even more suspect. Here's what I believe happened the night David died. I'll provide some of the evidence now, and then later throughout the series, you will learn additional information that will help fill any gaps. As in any theory, there will be some conjecture, but I believe there is enough evidence that pretty much connects all the dots. I believe Miss X will be surprised by how much of this theory is spot on. On the afternoon of February 8th of 2018, David came home to talk to his mother and I about getting a divorce after only 11 months of marriage. David had been out of the mental hospital for a total of 8 days, but was still struggling with his mental health. My wife asked David what would happen if he went back home to his apartment to talk to his wife about getting a divorce. He responded, "She'd go ballistic." Given David's fragile state of mind and the fact that we had witnessed Miss X smack him repeatedly across the face, I told David when he got home not to bring up the subject of divorce. Instead, I asked him to take a long lunch break the next day, grab as much of his personal belongings as possible, and then drive home to our house right after work. He agreed. That was the plan. 8 hours after telling my wife and I that she'd go ballistic if he asked for a divorce, David was engulfed in flames. Here is what I believe is a logical theory for what happened to the night David died. After arriving home from having, what she says in her interview, the worst day, everything that could go wrong, Miss X learns that I'm not going to come up to apologize after all. As I said earlier, I was going to apologize for telling her at the hospital I was going to get legal guardianship of David after witnessing her smack him across the face. And since I wasn't going to apologize, we believe this led to her demanding to know what we talked about that afternoon. As you heard in the recorded interview with the state fire marshal, Miss X is asked if she ever spoke with David about moving home, taking a break, and getting a divorce.
It was definitely that week. I don't remember if we talked about that day. Exactly.
Are we to believe Miss X when she says she doesn't remember whether David talked to her about taking a break or getting a divorce the night he died, but she does remember David eating loudly, watching Netflix, and laughing at silly animals? Have you noticed how none of the investigators have any skepticism about anything Miss X has to say? There's good reason Miss X wouldn't want to admit they talked about getting a divorce. It's a thing called motive. From coming home after the worst day at work, to learning her father-in-law was not going to apologize and that David wanted to move home and get a divorce, I believe David knew exactly what he was talking about when he said Miss X would go ballistic. And that's exactly what she did when she learned what had been discussed that afternoon in our living room. I believe when David went to bed that night, he took his wedding ring off once and for all, set it on the nightstand. He then proceeded to drop his pants and crawl into bed naked. It was Miss X who then woke him up, told him he needed to go to his parents. I remember when Miss X told me at the hospital that it was David who told her to go to her parents. I was confused, thinking it should have been the other way around. It was podcaster Gavin Fish who mentioned that the best lie is a half-truth, and I believe that is exactly what Miss X is doing here, repeating what she told David. It keeps things simple, and it is, after all, at least half the truth. Having been with David just a few hours earlier, I can tell you that his mental state was very fragile. I once told senior prosecutor Mr. Harris that when David was in this psychosis condition, I could have told him to jump out a window, and I believe he would have. I believe this is the condition David was in after being startled and yelled at after being woken up. And while we can speculate what was said and what caused David to be positioned over the sink, it is forensic evidence that confirms this is where David was standing at the time of the ignition of the fire.
Yeah, I see not a very big spot, but it was right there at the dishwasher.
Prior to the fire, had oil been spilled on David, so he positioned himself, believing he was going to be washed up? This, to me, is the most logical conclusion based upon Miss X's own words. She says, quote, "When I saw him pouring the oil, I reached behind him where the sink was, and there's like a sprayer. That was just like my first instinct, like to get the oil off of him. So I reached for that. The sprayer was photographed undisturbed and in its holder. More importantly, this puts Miss X directly in the location where David was positioned at the time of ignition, and it is the location necessary to start the fire. Remember, the anterior of both David's wrists had a very distinctive protected area in what appears to be an imprint of the kitchen sink edge on David's right wrist. No one we have consulted with could think of any way David could have ignited the fire while in this position. So was David led to the sink believing he was going to be washed up, but instead was lit on fire? In the 911 call, Miss X states, quote, "My husband has started a fire on the floor," end quote. There is evidence that the fire started and was most intense on the entryway floor and in front of the dishwasher. This is where we believe Miss X threw a lit towel on the floor just to the side of where David was standing, engulfing him in flames. The compulsion of the fire then threw David backwards into the refrigerator, causing David to hit his head on the handle of the refrigerator, breaking it off.
So it was a lot of walking back and forth, and not lightly, just boom, boom, you know, until they were arguing, or people were arguing upstairs. I heard a big boom, like somebody dropped something or somebody fell.
There was a gash in the back of David's head that is the width and at the angle that lines up with this hypothesis. David, on the kitchen floor, on his hands and knees, engulfed in flames, manages somehow to get to his bedroom and lays on the bed, extinguishing the fire. Miss X panics and immediately goes into the bathroom to try to wash the oil off, so as she says, quote, or I will go up in flames too. She then opens up the study bedroom windows to try to clear out some of the smoke. When the fire alarms go off, the maintenance worker, who was in bed in his first floor apartment, quickly gets up and heads to their third floor apartment. Miss X then goes back into the kitchen, grabs the oil jug, and begins to pour oil over the entire kitchen floor. She then turns on the stove burners and throws a kitchen towel on top of the stove, believing this will ultimately lead to, quote, a really big fire and possibly an explosion. With her phone in their hand, she grabs David's truck keys. Holding the door open, she calls for the dog to come and heads out the door. She then begins to scream and bang on doors. The next door neighbor immediately calls 911. The time is 10:59. Within a few seconds, the maintenance worker arrives. He sees Miss X running down the hall and overhears her say that David tried to light her up too. The maintenance worker then opens the unlocked door and proceeds to put out a small fire around the dishwasher. At this point, David gets up from his bed and is heading in the direction of the door when he meets the maintenance worker. The maintenance worker sprays David with the fire extinguisher while David is still smoldering. The maintenance worker then exits the apartment due to the heavy smoke and the door closes behind him. David, who is severely injured, is left in the dark, smoke-filled room, now heads to the living room area. Footprint evidence tells us that David circled around into the kitchen, which had already been sprayed by the maintenance worker, and then turns back and instinctively opens the dog cage, checking on the dog. We believe that David then sat for a short period of time on a red rocking chair and eventually moved to the love seat. Evidence indicates this is where David sat for the next 38 minutes while the police and rescue people remained outside the apartment door, just feet away with the door propped open, calling his name, refusing to go in, believing David would attack them. Why else would they place a bunker in the doorway, have two officers on each side of the door, and set up a command center in the apartment across the hall? Clearly, they believe David posed a serious threat to the officers and to the fire and rescue people. As Miss X is screaming and running down the hall, she runs into another neighbor who notices she has a cell phone in her hand and tells her to call 911. This witness reported that it did not appear she had thought about calling 911 until he told her to. Miss X continues to run down the hall, out the back door, three flights down, as she is making contact with 911. Within 2 minutes from the time of the first 911 call came in, 1 minute from the time Miss X called, Plymouth police officers are on the scene. Miss X reports to the arriving officers that David started himself on fire, had recently been in a mental hospital, had attempted suicide before, did not own any guns but did possess knives, and was violent. All of this information is supported by the state fire marshal and the Plymouth police report, and all of it is not true with the exception of David recently spending time in a mental hospital. Why would she report such false information? Having been told this about David, you can understand why the Plymouth police were afraid to enter the apartment. After 38 minutes from the time the first 911 call came in, attempting to ventilate the apartment, officers shoot out windows. David then musters up enough strength to get up, and it appears that he first stumbled into the bedroom and then ultimately turns and heads out the apartment door and collapses. David is severely burned. Massive amounts of skin have fallen off. He has inhalation burns in his side, his mouth, and nose. His eyelids are inverted. His hands are partially degloved, with burns covering over 90% of his body. And why am I painting this gruesome picture of David's condition? Because the Plymouth and the State Fire Marshal want you to believe in this condition after breathing thick smoke for nearly 40 minutes and collapsing in the doorway, David says, "I could use a drink of water." That's right. That is what is written in the State Fire Marshal's report. In addition, the reports state that David, after collapsing, was then commanded to crawl and was checked for weapons, none of which I believe is true. David was then hauled off to the hospital and died 3 hours later after being taken off life support. Just imagine the scene. For over 30 minutes, the police refused to allow over a dozen fire and rescue people who were standing outside the apartment to go in, believing David was a serious threat to their safety. And then suddenly, here comes David, unclad and half mummified, burned on his entire body with his skin falling off. One can only imagine the horror they must have felt. I was told by a member of the fire department that members of the fire rescue team had to take time off from work, and some even went for special counseling because of what they witnessed. Fire and rescue people are trained to do just that, rescue, not stand outside an apartment and allow someone to die. The trauma they experienced was real. It would only be natural for the incident commander to feel some responsibility. Imagine the shock and horror he must have felt when what he had believed was a serious threat was instead a man grotesquely injured who was clinging to life. Up to this point, the police had done nothing wrong. They had believed what his wife had told them, but all of that was about to change. The unnecessary conspiracy, obstruction of justice, and cover-up was about to begin. Now you know what we believe happened the night David died, and you'll soon learn to the extent to which this conspiracy goes deep into the pit of Hennepin County corruption.
On the next episode of The Stack Deck.
We believed we had identified where David was standing at the time of ignition, and we wanted his input to see if he agreed. Mr. Peterson's supervisor, however, received a phone call from the then Plymouth Police Chief, Mike Goldstein, who objected to the BCA's involvement. In an email from senior Hennepin County attorney Alan Harris, I was told that, quote, "The BCA is reluctant to get into a case without a request from the jurisdiction which had the case in the first place," end quote. If this is true, then why wouldn't the chief of police request the BCA's involvement? Instead, he shuts down the one agent who is willing to help us out. Have we not clearly demonstrated that each and every one of the professionals and their agencies that have been involved in this case have not only failed us miserably, but have equally participated in a conspiracy against my son? How could it be any other way? Two pathologists who effectively mutilated my son, and for what purpose? They remove all of David's vital organs, including his heart, pretending to be performing a top-notch autopsy, only to intentionally omit the most glaring protected area on David's body and the only area on his body that is not burned.
You know, it's all showing that the single witness is not reliable that way, etc. You know what I mean? That we're not comfortable now saying this is how it played out, then we would make that change.
Sure, and the single witness you're saying is his wife.
Presumably, I can't remember exactly, you know, she's the main source of information for sure, you know, without going back and just looking at the case again.
Thank you for listening. As a listener, I know there's always ways that you want to help. And there's plenty of things you yourself can do if you feel the information presented in this series warrants a proper investigation by the DOJ and the FBI. You can do one or all of the following. First, tell your friends and family to listen to this podcast and sign the petition at change.org. The link for that is in our show notes. You can also call the DOJ at 202-514-2000 and call the FBI at 202-324-3000. You can also call your local investigative journalist and tell them about David's story. We believe that if enough people hear David's tragic story, the proper authorities will have no choice but to respond. Thank you for listening and for your support.